Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
While the Brexit vote came as a surprise to many political commentators, the signs had been there for a long time that something like this was going to happen in both politics and culture. England specifically was simmering with resentment, and all it needed was a reason to express it. Alwyn Turner is the author of All In It Together, England in the Early 21st Century, and he joins us now on News Talk. Alwyn, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Now, in your book, you contend that, I suppose, if the start of all this began with the Blair era, and many times it's been gone over the various scandals that went on, the lies about the Iraq war, etc. Did the dramatic depictions of Blair after that period have as much, if not more, force in the public's mind perception of what was going wrong in the corridors of power?
I think so. I think Tony Blair has been depicted in fictional versions on television more than any other prime minister in British history since Churchill, with the possible exception of Margaret Thatcher, but that tended to be after the event. The thing with Blair was it was while he was still prime minister, there was this outpouring of dramas and comedies about him. And I think it did shape people's perception, and particularly that issue of Iraq and not the invasion of Iraq, but the lying about Iraq, because that was hitting at one of the key selling points of Tony Blair, which was that he was a different type of politician. He was a clean pair of hands, and he was not contaminated by corruption and deceit. And then the perception grew that he was, and that he was just the same as the rest. And if he was like all the others, then there was no hope in politics. I think there was a turning away from the political process because Tony Blair was such a disappointment to so many people.
And was he also an avatar for the, and it seemed to be an increasing class distinction among the powerful, in that it was becoming increasingly posher?
Yes, I think that's true. I mean, he was the first public school educated prime minister we'd had in Britain since Alec Douglas Hume back in 1964. I mean, there was a long period where that seemed to have changed. The old establishment grip on power seemed to be waning. And then there's Tony Blair as a public schoolboy coming through. And during his time, the wealth inequality grew. It had stabilised during the 90s. And then it started to widen again, the gap between the richest and the rest of us. And there was a perception that Tony Blair was on the side of the rich, particularly after he left office and seemed to be making such extraordinary sums of money. Mm-hmm. It rang a bit ugly with people.
Within the media in general, I suppose other areas too, sports and the arts, were public school people, publicly educated people seem to have become increasingly overrepresented.
Yes, very much so. It was, again, there's this contrast with the 1990s when, when Tony Blair came to power, he was talking in estuary English from time to time, you know, he was flattening his vowels and trying to seem like he was just an ordinary, regular kind of guy. And everything was about being ordinary and regular and normal. And then there was this really remarkable rise of posh presenters on television in particular. And then, as you say, in terms of culture and sport, disproportionate numbers of British medal winners at the 2012 Olympic Games were privately educated, and not just in the normal kind of sports where Britain tends to do very well, the ones that involve horses and boats, but you know, in proper sports as well.
Yeah.
And there was that a sense that it was okay, as long as you were authentic and you didn't apologise for being posh, it was okay from there onwards. And we see the result now with two of the last three prime ministers we've had here have been old Etonians. You know, we've gone back to the old format.
Mm. Is that slightly contradictory then one of the champions of Brexit, well, you couldn't get posher than Boris Johnson, yet there was a reaction against that poshness prior to the Brexit vote?
No, I don't think there's a reaction against the poshness. I think there's an embrace of the poshness. I think people are okay as long as you say that you are posh. Nigel Farage, who is much more influential than any other politician in the last, well, in the post-Thatcher years here, is, again, an ex-public schoolboy, an ex-trader in the City of London. I mean, but he makes no apology for this. He doesn't try to be as if he's ordinary, except that by being authentically posh and not apologising, people do relate to him as being one of us. It's about values as much as it is anything else. And so I don't think there's a reaction against the poshness. So I think there's an embrace of it. The posh are the popular figures, whether it's Jeremy Clarkson or Stephen Fry or all of the judges on the Great British Bake Off or whatever. You know, there's this element of embracing that.
Right, but as long as they're genuine about it.
Yes, absolutely. And that, I think that's a reaction, as I say, against a time, well, I say the 1990s, it had been going on for some time before that, of people trying to pretend that they weren't.
Also, though, Farage, who, as you say, is you know, unashamedly comes from a very nice background, there's something almost nostalgic about them in the sense he's kind of a posh Del Boy type figure.
Yeah, I think he is. He, so much of the imagery around him, it feels like the 1970s, really, or as you say, maybe the 1980s with Del Boy. But no, he's not far off George Cole in Minder.
Yes.
You know. Wearing a slightly dodgy mohair coat and not paying his bar bill at his private club. There's that sort of feel to him. He's a bit of a rogue. Mm. And I say the British, I mean the English in this instance, respond to that rather well. That's a nice stereotype that we've had for a very long time. And it's quite good to play into that.
And I suppose he might have just continued in his political career as a slightly fringy joke figure, but it seemed like he was able to catalyse all this anger, you know, for various reasons around the issue of Brexit.
Yeah, I think that's the key to it. I don't personally see the Brexit vote as being particularly about Europe. I think it's a metaphor for a whole load of other things that people felt had gone wrong. And in particular, that people felt that they weren't being listened to by a ruling class. And then suddenly in 2016, we were finally offered this referendum where the Prime Minister and all the politicians said, you tell us what to do and we will do it. And it was notable that the turnout figures were so much higher than they are for general elections, let alone for European Parliament elections. And I think that was because people felt that this time they were being allowed to speak. And their views were going to be taken account of. And when it came to that, then people, it turned out, were still interested in politics. In the same way that in 2014, the Scottish referendum for independence had a huge turnout by any normal standards in Scotland. There is this feeling that we've not been listened to. And in an era of the internet and particularly of social media, we want to be listened to. We want to have our voice heard. And a referendum seemed to be the chance to do that. But as I said, I don't think it's necessarily about Europe particularly. I think it was Farage's genius was to focus all the discontent everywhere else and say, let's blame a few bureaucrats in Brussels.
And in that sense of not being listened to, was it all of Britain feeling they weren't being listened to, or was it more specifically English people feeling they weren't being listened to?
I think it's much more acute in England. And my book is about England rather than previous books I've written have been about the whole country. But it post-devolution, it feels like the constituent parts of the United Kingdom have diverged sufficiently that it is possible to talk about England not quite in isolation, but not far off. It is a different mood here, I think. And you could feel that even Tony Blair's third great election victory in 2005, the Conservative Party actually got more votes in England than the Labour Party, despite having the Labour Party ending up with a majority of whatever it was, 66 seats, I think. I mean, a huge, overwhelming majority. But actually in England, the Tories were still in front. And you could feel even then that there was a separation out of the constituent parts.
Now that we're in a post-Brexit situation, particularly in England, will voters feel that they have been listened to and are being listened to?
I genuinely don't know, and I'm going to hide under the claim that I'm a historian. I felt that it would work out. It felt to me as if once we got past the paralysis that descended upon the political class in the aftermath of the referendum, once we got onto a bit where the government actually said we are going to do what we were told, that would have been sufficient. However, into the midst of that is suddenly thrust this very, very strange episode of COVID, and it's very hard to know how that's going to work out. Because it kind of depends on what happens in the next few months, I think. At the moment, the government is not getting a huge amount of blame for it, but it is possible that it will do so. And if it does, then that destroys the legitimacy of a government. If it can't fulfill the first basic principle of a government, which is to look after its own people, and it's not used reasonable endeavours, if that's the public perception, and thousands of people, tens of thousands of people have died as a consequence, then that becomes a very serious charge.
So given that we're in the midst of it right now, it's almost impossible to tell how that might play out. The sense of wanting England to be, you know, a proper England again, so to speak, does that speak to a lot of what you were alluding to earlier on, that in a way there's a yearning to have the upper class run things?
I think it's not necessarily a yearning for the upper class to run it. It's more a recognition that these voices are part of an England that people recognise. They do tend to be caricatures. As I say, Nigel Farage is a caricature of a bit of a rogue, but a lovable rogue. And Stephen Fry is a caricature of the intellectual. These are recognisable types that we can identify with. Nigella Lawson is another. You know, there's a whole swathe of these, but they do fall into very definite places, and they are within a recognisably English culture, and I think that's what produces some of the resonance and the appeal of these people.
The book is called All in It Together: England in the Early 21st Century. Alwyn Turner is the author. Alwyn, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moncrief on News Talk,
brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.